Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Welcome back to this fair country.
Yeah, unfortunately, I missed the thing that's been keeping you busy for the last week, which is Canada's 150th birthday.
Oh, so it's not one day, Jocelyn. It's all year.
Is it? So Matt and I were down at Nerdtacular. So hello to all of you Gamers Inn fans who were kind enough to come up and tell me that you were Gamers Inn fans at Nerdtacular. It's, I meant to text you and be like, oh my god, there's Gamers Inn fans here. Because I know, obviously, with Angry Chicken being on the Frog Pants Network, when I go to Nerdtacular, when I go to BlizzCon, obviously because Angry Chicken covers a Blizzard game, there's a lot of people that come up and say, I'm a huge fan of Angry Chicken, this is awesome, blah, blah, blah. And so people who come up to me and say they're a fan of Gamers Inn or Slaying Demons, those are like my two, like, so close to my heart project, like, not necessarily pet projects, but I find them... The people who come up and tell me that they're fans of those shows just give me all of the like warm fuzzy feelings. So
that's really awesome to hear, and I wish I could have been there to also feel the warm and fuzzies in person. But I did suddenly hear fans cry out and then feel a bunch. It was a Star Wars reference and I failed miserably, but I could feel something happening that was very warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, it was generally a warm and fuzzy week. Got to see a lot of friends, got to meet a lot of fans. It was really good. So, side effect of that, though, I didn't play too much this week.
No.
Played a whole ton of Pokemon because our room happened to be right on top of a Pokestop. And then just down the hall was a gym. So, I was... basically luring the crap, because I still had lures left from CreateCon. That's how long ago it was that I really paid a lot of attention to Pokemon.
Wow.
But so I still had lures left from CreateCon, so I was luring the crap out of the Pokestop, and then we did raid battles in the gym and all kinds of cool stuff. And it kept it was really funny because it kept changing between the three teams the gym did, and you would see like Coverville and me and Matt and, you know, all kinds of like recognizable fan names would be constantly battling over this gym. So we had a lot of fun with Pokemon, and we also had a few Mario Kart battles. You might have seen some pictures tweeted out. A lot of like kind of co-op-y type games and a lot of fun was had. But nothing really new, because other than the Switch, I didn't take anything with me to play. So
how did the old portable Switch play go? Like, did you feel like that was a worthy investment since you were flying and traveling so much?
Well, when we were flying, we had a really awesome experience. We flew direct, so we only had, you know, kind of like 7 to 8 hours of travel instead of 12 to 14 hours of travel. Nice. So I didn't have that much of a chance to actually sit and play with the Switch outside of actually playing with it at the actual event. We had a friend who brought their the dock to plug into the TV, so we were playing it in hotel rooms. And so I didn't really do anything, like I didn't play it on the plane. I just watched, you know, a couple movies and then we landed and it was glorious. So I didn't, like, it's the one use case I thought I had for the portability of the Switch, and I didn't end up doing it. So it was kind of just like I was ready to sit back and watch a movie as opposed to play Mario Kart. But I think once there are more games that I'm really into that I want to play, like, that will make the Switch a better investment, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, right now, I mean, I didn't want to play Breath of the Wild. I didn't want to play Snipperclips because we're done with those games. Like, I've already beat them. And then Mario Kart is kind of infinitely replayable, but not as fun by yourself.
Right.
So Mario Kart is very much like you want to get as many people playing as possible. And yeah, technically Matt and I could have played on the teeny tiny little Joy-Cons with on the airplane tray with the Switch. We could have done that, but I prefer to play with the Pro Controller. And I didn't take the Pro Controller because I was like, that's a little excessive, Jocelyn. And then I regretted it.
I can sort of see not wanting to drag the Pro Controller. And, you know, I did a bit of portable gaming with the Switch you know, I was doing some traveling for Canada Day. It's also my mother's birthday on Canada Day, so I celebrated Canada Day's birthday. Then 2 days later, I celebrated my mother's birthday because Canada 150. And it was an interesting experience where I played a little bit of Zelda on the trip and was just using the Joy-Cons attached to the Switch. And it's probably the first time I'd played for more than just 10 minutes of, ooh, look, I can play this in portable mode back in the dock. So I've been sort of experiencing the Switch in the opposite way, where I'm always in the dock. And when I tried it on the go, I was like, okay, I need more games for this thing, because playing this on the go is not just kind of a novelty. It's also just really cool and fun to be playing these types of games away from the couch, or the television for that matter. But yeah, there's not a whole lot. But you know what? When you fly to BlizzCon, I'm pretty sure that you're going to have lots of games on your Switch.
I'm hoping that I will... Wait, will I have Mario by that time?
Yes, you will. Yes. Late October, as long as it doesn't get delayed.
I can see something like Mario being something that I play more of on the go. There's more to the game. I don't need anybody else to play with me. Like, that's what I need. I need another big single-player experience that I really don't get, because I play so much multiplayer with friends just normally, that having a single player experience to play when I'm on my own on the go, like on a flight alone to BlizzCon, that's exactly what I need out of the Switch right now. So where I don't really have a game like that right now, that's where it fell a little flat for me. But I should have known that was going to happen. Right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not like you're going to play ARMS on the plane.
No, you know, punching. I feel like the person in front of me would get a little bit ticked off, although I guess technically you can play with the buttons, but
I did see a photo of someone playing Switch at Nerdtacular, and they had ARMS. Was there any ARMS tournaments? Because I feel like ARMS is new enough that it could have been like, Jocelyn, get in on that stuff. You don't want to buy ARMS, but you could play it, you could try it, and then hate it, and then not go back to it, because it is not everybody's game, and I didn't pick it up. It's not for me either.
I didn't see anybody playing it, but that doesn't mean it wasn't happening. We played a lot of board games, so we got our hands on a lot of different stuff, which was great. But we're not here to talk about board games. We are here to talk about actual games. And Ryan, you played some while I was away. I didn't. I meant
careful now.
Yeah, I forgot a word. That was my fault. I know board games are actual games. I love board games. We're gonna buy a dining room table that converts into a gaming table. I love board games. Don't send emails.
There you go. So don't hit send. You heard it here. She's investing in a specialized table. I think that means she likes that stuff.
Yeah. So, Ryan, you've been playing some actual video games this week, and I want to hear about it. So you played some more Battlegrounds.
I did. Quickly, I found out that this game is a phenomenon. I knew that before, but so much so that Matt and Adam, two people you know of as well, are playing it, and I was like, guys, message me next time you're gonna play, because I actually enjoyed this game, which is surprising because it's a competitive multiplayer shooter. Yeah, exactly. So we played a couple rounds last night, and we actually won. I didn't fire a single bullet, so they did all the work. I just sat there and looked pretty. But I think that
I'm gonna say this, and it's gonna make me sound like such a bitch.
Sure.
But so I actually live with Adam, who is one of the guys that Ryan was playing with, and Adam was like, our team came first. It was me and Matt and Ryan, and I was like, you came first with Ryan?
No, that's totally fine. Because literally, like, did not fire a bullet.
That's kinda mean.
No, it's fine, because honestly, when I was playing that match, I felt so bad, because I was basically a spotter. I did one good thing. I suggested that we find a building, we hunker down, and hope for the best, which is what we did. And kudos to Adam and Matt, who are both way better at these types of games, because they're like tango foxtrotting and running around and talking
tango
to each
other. Tango foxtrotting.
That's a thing. And they were talking to each other like they're from the army, or the video game army, if that was a real thing. So it was interesting. So I got bum luck in terms of guns. I had a pistol and a shotgun. And I know you're going to say this, shotgun's the best shotgun ever.
I even double shotgun because it's so good.
But it was a pump action. It was like a double fire. It wasn't like an automatic shotgun. So it wasn't the best shotgun. So I basically spotted one dude through a window. And I think we got to the point where all the other teams were fighting each other, and Adam and Matt were able to pick off a couple folks, and then eventually it just got down to the fact that we were the last team surviving. And yeah.
And it's so much better when you have more eyes, right? So you're the last team left. So how does it figure out who comes first, second, third? Do you guys turn on each other?
No. It literally just says you guys won. And when you finish a game, it'll actually say like what rank you were. So since it was a squad battlegrounds, you could see that we were number one of 27. So there were 27 teams that were competing, and we came in first. And yeah, we I think we won because of their strategy and me not holding them back.
So them being bad instead of
being good.
You meant your teammates had a good strategy.
They were very good, and they had a good strategy, and I was just along for the ride. I was like the scared hostage they were saving, and they gave me a gun to make. They took the clip out, but they wanted to make me feel good while they were saving.
Give you something to throw, if nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. I literally did not fire a bullet. I just walked through buildings and picked up shit, and then followed them around. But that game is still insanely fun, because every time you hear a gunshot and you're thinking, where did that come from? Or every time a grenade goes off or you see a guy, your heart just goes into like fury mode, and you're like, oh my God, there's a guy. Everybody calm down. But there's a guy, he just ran by, and you're like off in the distance, you see like motorcycles and stuff. And, yeah, I'm all in now. I've subscribed to the subreddit. There's a new map coming, Desert, I think they're calling it.
I was going to say, yeah, there's new maps. They're talking about putting zombies in it somehow. I don't know if that's going to be a co-op-y thing or if they're just going to be like another potential hazard is the word I was looking for.
Yeah, I was reading online, and the zombie mode is already in there under custom games, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And the way it works is you are a squad, and instead of against AI or against human-controlled zombies, or other human players, you're against AI zombies that just chase you and shit, and then you have to run away. I think
I would really like if you're playing, because you get thrown into the battleground with 100 other people, right? Or 99 other people.
Yeah.
It would be so cool if when somebody died, then that person got transformed into an AI zombie. So they can go and they can go play another battleground if they want to, but their like corpse is walking around like mindlessly.
So I'm wrong.
I think that would be super freaking cool.
Yeah, crazed madman in the chat room. Speaking of, how'd he get in there if he's crazed? He figured it out. But he is saying that the zombies are humans, not AI, so I was wrong. Oh, okay. So that's interesting.
But that would be cool if you could decide like whether you wanted to like keep playing as a zombie and like go try to find people to bite, or if you wanted to, you know, leave the game, go play another battleground, and then the AI would take over your zombie. That I think would be a really cool, fun idea.
I'm genuinely excited about a early access multiplayer competitive shooter, which is not something anybody has ever heard me say in the last 276 episodes of the Gamers. I don't think so. I mean, you could go back and look. I'm certainly not going to, but. It's interesting,
especially
that,
not the combination of those things, like early access shooter, like multiplayer online.
Yeah, early access sort of throws me off almost right away, but there's been like two great examples lately with Dead Cells that I talked about last week and PlayerUnknown's Battleground, which is still janky. Battleground is still very janky. Like last night when I was loading in, I'd use my parachute, I'd come down and I'd land. And then what would happen would be all the buildings would have like really rudimentary shapes and textures. And you know, I wouldn't be able to go into them until they properly loaded. It wasn't a texture issue. It was literally that the shapes were not loading properly. So as everybody else is running around, it's like, I got a shotgun. I got a M16. I got a backpack. I'm like, I'm waiting for this door to spawn. So just hold up, everybody. So it's still an early access title. It still shows its rough edges, but the gameplay loop that they're providing here is just fun, and it's certainly something that you should play with your friends. I think that's why I'm enjoying it so much, is that you know, you go back and forth with people. We had a random join our squad. We forgot to hit that little checkbox,
so we had some fun with him. The random person really early on.
There was some interesting moments where he We somehow let him drive the vehicle, and we commented over Skype, like, why is the one person not on Skype driving the vehicle? And then suddenly later he hit a rock and early access happened as the car just flipped end over end, which does not happen when you run over a little dinky rock, but we gave him shit for that and we had a good time, and it was just a lot of fun. And that game creates these moments where I know I'm not the first person to talk about these moments, but I know that I won't be the last, because this game just constantly is presenting these moments where you're, oh, remember that time when I didn't win, but shit happened and it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Or that time we did win and it turned out Ryan didn't fire a shot. He just looked out a window for most of the time. And I was helping, quote unquote.
You were helping.
I was. But
you spotted a guy.
I did spot one guy, and then Belanger unloaded a clip into him. So it was fun. I'm really enjoying that game, and I'm glad that it existed outside of just game night that we had. So, yeah.
So did you guys go, like, full hardcore? Did you follow a map and try to get to, like, the most guns, or did you just kind of create your own strategy?
They started this rotation where every time that we loaded a new game, someone new would be the leader, and they'd be like, they'd be dropping pins and let's go to this building, let's go to this area, and then when the ring collapses, they would decide whether we go forward or stick around. And it was just a lot of fun, and no real, like, hardcore strategy, but I like my strategy where it's, you know, find a building, get into it, find the stuff inside of it. If you feel comfortable defending that building with the weapons you have, then stay there as long as it's within the ring. And if it's not in the ring, you just keep going and you find mm-hmm. more stuff. And I'm more of a scavenger than, like, a hunter in that game. You know, I'd prefer mm-hmm. to have everything I need to defend myself before I, you know, go out and try to kill people. I let everybody else do the killing, and then we just win.
Good plan.
Yeah.
So what about Breath of the Wild? Because in that one, you're the only person. You can't just leave it up to your team. So how is the Breath of the Wild DLC treating you? Because there's some Master Trials in there, right?
Yeah. So Breath of the Wild DLC, it's called the Master Trials. It's the first part of two packs. You have to buy it all together.
Are there only two? I thought there was going to be three.
I'm pretty sure there's only two, but the second one is beefier. It feels like there's a lot more to it, and that they've said there's a new story, a new dungeon, and then something else within that, like, much beefier than this first pack.
Right.
$30 Canadian, $20 American, which is, you know, not a bad price for DLC these days. If you look at other season passes, this is chump change compared to what you're paying for other games. Unless
maybe
you just don't
it
buy
was
DLC.
30, I thought there were three. That might be where it's coming from.
That could totally be, like, one of those splits down the middle. But when you look at the DLC, like, the second pack is definitely the meat that a majority of gamers would be really interested in. Whereas pack number one is for those folks that really enjoyed Zelda and want to go back to it and want an excuse to go back to it. Like myself, I really enjoyed Breath of the Wild, and this pack has sort of got me back into it, because when you finish a game, you're always like, man, I love that so much, I am going to play it on hard, I'm going to play a new character, do a new run through, and do this different and this different. You never do that. Time does not allow such things to happen these days. I know I'm speaking for myself here, but, like, when was the last time you finished a game twice, Jocelyn?
Actually full on finished a game twice. I know I've started secondary playthroughs mm-hmm. of Quantum Break and Horizon Zero Dawn, but I've never actually, like, full on completed since, like, maybe Majora's Mask or Ooh. Ocarina of Time, or, you know, the Mario titles back in the day, Donkey Kong, like, all the kind of stuff when I was in, you know, late elementary school, early high school, when I didn't do much other than play video games.
So time as well as, like, money.
Well, yeah, disposable income, having the ability to buy more than one game in a year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, yeah, time, exactly. Like, since I've kind of gotten more of one and less of the other, I haven't really started all the way through another playthrough of a game and finished it, so.
Yeah, that's why I love DLC, because it it gives me a reason to jump back into a game that I really enjoyed. And I know we've had this conversation before. I know you weren't as big a fan of Breath of the Wild. And I'll tell you this right now. This pack is not for you. It's definitely not for someone who liked Breath of the Wild but does not wish to go back to that world. Mm. Because this does not add anything new, especially if you were not a fan of the combat. Now let's get the easy stuff out of the way. There's a bunch of treasure hunting you can do where you're getting items like the Tingle Suit. a bunch of masks. You can get a Korok mask, which, you know, wiggles weirdly when there's a Korok nearby, which is going to be very
handy. So that's actually useful if you're trying to, like, 100% the game.
Yeah, if you want to get that golden poop, that's something that you can do, is use that mask to unlock that. That gets us into the next major addition, which is the master. Oh, actually, before that, there's the hero's path, which I thought was going to be kind of lame. It's the map feature that they added that kind of shows you the path you took. And it really illustrates how much shit you missed in that game, because when you load up hero's path, you're like, holy crap, I literally circled around this very detailed area that looks like must have a bunch of stuff there. And then you go to it, and there's a shrine and a couple Korok seeds and, you know, just a cool area to check out. Sometimes even quests. I even found a stable that I had not seen in my, like, 50 hours in that game. And I was like, holy crap. It was called, like, the Outskirts Stable, so it was very well named. So the hero's path is kind of neat, even just to kind of boot up and see, like, where you went.
And does that track everything from your start of your playthrough, or is it only, like, since you bought and installed the DLC?
It's everything. So it feeds on the information that was being tracked for some reason, and it shows you up to 200 hours. So if you have less than 200 hours of gameplay in Breath of the Wild, you will be able to see the path you took. And you can manipulate it in a way that kind of, like, you can play it from the beginning and watch it kind of happen. And it shows you when you died and resets and stuff. And you can speed it up so it just goes all the way through. And you can zoom in on paths to kind of see, okay, when I was doing this, the Great Plateau, how did I handle this? Mm-hmm. Very poorly, it turned out.
It also show, like, a little X, like, where you died?
Yeah, it does. Totally shows you exactly where you died. And
so it's map really cool. Geek in me is going crazy right now, because I'm like, if they're tracking everyone's Breath of the Wild playthroughs,
yeah,
I would, like, kill to get my hands on that data. Like, you could do, like, death hotspots and show, like, where the majority of players die. Or you could do, like, most likely paths. You could do just all kinds of things. Like, the GIS geek in me is just like, because this is something I've always wanted to do. It's something that I thought would be really cool back when WildStar was first announced, and I was just like, oh man, it'd be so cool if you could see in, like, a great big open world, like, where people decided the path they decided to take and where they decided to, like, settle and you know, do their first bunch of questing. And, like, that could just inform things like level design and all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, tracking movements in video games, I think, is just so freaking cool. But, yeah, so, I mean, I don't really care where I went in Breath of the Wild, but it would be really interesting if there was some kind of just, like, open database that you could pull from as a, like, map maker to make some of these cool kind of interesting maps. I mean, they don't really help anything, but
no, just it's like a pet project type thing, and that would be really cool. But as far as I can tell, it's a closed system, and Nintendo hasn't made this stuff readily available or even show the fact that they have that information at their disposal. But it's a neat feature that kind of allows you to tell, like, where you went and where you didn't go. And as I started the DLC, I collected all the treasure. I started looking at the hero's path and going to a couple locations I hadn't been and finding, oh yeah, there's a shrine here, there's a Korok seed, and kind of fiddling around. And then after, I started to go and look at the master trial, which is you go back to the Lost Woods, you talk to the Great Deku Tree, and he says, look, I've been holding out on you. The sword actually has a lot of power, and you're just too weak. So I'm going to throw you into this trial. Exactly. He's a real dick. I don't know what happened to him, but man, he's seen some shit. So you go into the trial, you stick your sword in, and you get teleported away, and it's It's very much like a quest that you would have stumbled upon in the main game, which was, I think, Crescent Island or something, where you wash up on the island, you have no items, no clothing, and it says, solve this puzzle and I'll give you all your crap back. So it's just like that. You start with no...
This was the master trial, not master mode. They're two different things, right?
Yeah, they're two different things. The master trial is for you to unlock your... It's the 50... the 50 levels for you to unlock your true power, which I don't know what it is, and I don't know, at a certain point I'll probably get far enough and be like, I just need to know what it is so I can move past this, because it is very difficult. Because you start with no armor, no weapons, nothing. The only thing you come into the mode in with is your hearts and any boosts you may have, which you need to make sure that if you're going to take on Master Trials, that you collect some and get really good at cooking and cook and then eat a heart boost type piece of food. And then that carries into the mode, which kind of feels like cheating, but I don't know if it lets you do it.
Well, it's kind of weird that that carries in, but you couldn't like cook and eat a food to get your hearts to do the Master Sword Trial. Like... Mm-hmm. Because that's the first thing that I tried, is I, you know, ate my plus 13 heart food and then went to pull the sword and then only had, like, the 7 hearts that I had at the time or something like that. So it's funny that, you know, the main game makes you compete with just whatever you've earned, but the Master Trials lets you take buffs in. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, maybe he's not so much a dick. Maybe he's like, okay, I'll let you. I didn't let it slide before. I'll let you in with this, but I'm watching you. And it starts out very innocently, where you see a couple of moblins sitting at a fire, and you pick up a stick and you're like, okay, let's do this, and you hit them with the stick, and they die, and you move on. But then it continues to evolve towards the fact that now you're fighting larger enemies, and you're getting hit. You have no armor, so when you get hit, it's pretty devastating. It's like 4 or 5 hearts, as many people know in Breath of the Wild. It's not, you're not losing a quarter at a time. You're
no,
losing a
lot. It's punishing.
Yeah, and I got as far as like the 10th, maybe the 7th floor before I ran out of hearts and got killed. And you have to be, and that's why you have to enjoy the combat, because you have to be able to fight really well, or else you're going to get just rolled over by enemies that you were probably just taking out left, right, and center. In the main game. And this is not a mode you want to tackle right away if you're starting anew. You need to do this like after you finish the game.
This sounds exactly like what I wanted out of the, like, how you unlock the Master Sword. Like, I wanted you to go to the Deku Tree, have some sort of trial, go through, maybe even, you know, like you said, take away all of your stuff and just say, like, okay, you have to get through these 10 levels and then you'll get the Master Sword. So you can go and do it with 3 hearts and no cooking, or, you know, but you have to be super duper awesome. Like, I'm sure the speedrunners would decide whether that was actually worth their time or not to go get the Master Sword. But otherwise, you know, you don't get it until you can come back and you can be more, you can have more hearts, give yourself a little bit of an easier time, blah, 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 blah. That's kind of what I was looking for, as opposed to just pull real hard and try not to strain your back.
This is definitely what you were looking for, but I feel like it's a step above that. Like, maybe there needed to be not a master trial, but a let's make sure you can swing this thing right trial, just to make sure you can wield it.
Because the master trial, how many levels does it have? 25?
No, 20? It's like 50.
Oh, is it 50?
54. Oh. I think there's 50 actual levels, but there are, spoiler alert, a couple of break levels where they present you with a couple chests and a cooking pot, where it's like, okay, you're in for it now, prepare.
Right.
It is beefy. I honestly do not think I'll be able to finish it. It is difficult. And you, when you die, it gives you game over, kicks you back to your last save, which is before you place the sword in. So in that instance, if you spend a lot of time going around experimenting and finding just the right recipe to start off the Master Trials, you will keep that buff when you get game over and come back, so you can immediately try it again if that's what you want to do. So that is a nice little piece, but I would have liked to see some sort of like I don't know, tiered system where I unlock a bookmark maybe where I can,
yeah,
I've made it through to 25. Now I get to start at 25 if I want. Mm-hmm. But that's not there. And it is, it's for people.
At least
who,
it's not there yet. Right. Cause you said you've made it through 7, like,
yeah, no, you're right. I'm definitely not there yet, but I would be surprised.
Cause there might be something at, you know, every 10 or every, or it might just be halfway once you hit 25.
We'll see. I don't know. So it's there. It's a new, it's part of the DLC. And I think for folks who were looking for reason to jump back in, Master Trials is certainly something you can check out. But the last thing they added was the new hard mode, which a lot of people were like, why do I have to pay for hard mode? Well, it's called Master Mode. I don't think that will change your opinion, if that's what you were thinking before, but, everything is just super difficult. It takes forever to kill things. I pretty much ran away for most part, just kind of like trying to get my bearings. But just for an example, the Moblin that you find at the Temple of Time right at the start of the game has 3 hearts. You have 3 hearts, and it killed me in 2 hits. And it would have taken me like 5 or 6 hits to kill it. So it really means you have to either take them out very slowly, or you use your dodge timing to make sure that you're getting as many hits in as possible without you getting hit. And at first I thought Master Mode felt very cheap and kind of like, well, this is lame. It's just harder to kill things. But then once I started to actually play the game and move past the enemies and shoot straight toward towers, gain some abilities and stuff, it actually started to get a lot more fun, where I was then getting the right amount of ammo, using my environment to my abilities and making sure that I had advantage over people. It was actually a lot more fun. Plus amiibos, cannot stress enough the cheat button that are amiibos, because holy shit. Just I am rolling in food and armor and weapons now, and it's cheating. Don't get me wrong, it's definitely cheating. And there are going to be people who say, like, I beat Master Mode with amiibos, and then I beat Master Mode without amiibos, and those are 2 different classes of people. I am definitely I'm so happy that finally I have these amiibo, and I have a stack of them for Zelda, and I can finally enjoy them all, and know that they're going to good use, because they're allowing me to cheat in Master Mode. I dig it as someone who wanted to go back to Breath of the Wild but needed an excuse. But it's not going to change anyone's opinion. Like, this DLC is not going to be like, okay, this game is suddenly different and better. It's just an extra layer. If you're interested, I wanted to play the game again with Japanese language and English subtitles. And I gotta say, Zelda sounds much better in Japanese than she does in English. So I'm enjoying that. But I think for you specifically, you're gonna wanna wait till the DLC Pack 2 comes out and then see what that is, whether the story is something you wanna experience or not. And then deciding to purchase then. And then this stuff will all be there, and you can enjoy it in your main campaign or your, however the DLC works. And it'll be cool. You'll have your map data and you'll have your Master Trials to check out. But I don't think this is for people who did not enjoy Breath of the Wild as much as others did, right?
See, and that's kind of my problem with the way that Nintendo has decided to do this, where they're not offering the packs for individual sales. So I can't just say, okay, DLC Pack 1 isn't for me, I'm going to wait until DLC Pack 2 and buy that one. It's like, I have to pay $30 whether I want Pack 1, Pack 2, or both. I don't have the option. So yeah. I feel like $30 for one set of DLC is way too much, because I'm never going to use the stuff in pack number one. So, you know, like, that's my big problem. I would even have preferred if, say, it's $30 for, you know, both of them, that maybe you charge me $20 for one of them or something. Like, make the DLC $30 pack the discount if you want to buy both. But also give people the option of just buying one. But that's just me. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would quite enjoy both packs, and I know I'm a small audience who didn't necessarily love Breath of the Wild. I thought it was good,
yeah.
But I didn't, you know, it's not my game of the year or anything. So I don't have any desire to get back into it. But that might change with some story content. But then I look at the story content and go, I already spent hundreds of dollars buying a Switch to play this game. At, like, do I really want to pay even more money to maybe like what they did with the story? So I don't know. We'll have to see when Pack 2 comes out. Once we get a little bit more information, I'll probably let you play it and let me know if I should pick it up or not. But I'm glad that you're enjoying what's going on in the first set of DLC, because I know we were both kind of on the fence when it was announced. We were like, oh, that's what you're leading with? Okay.
It was odd timing for them to announce a DLC pack before the game came out.
Yeah.
And the three treasures that it gave you, that's the other thing. As part of buying the pack, it gave you three treasure chests at the beginning of the game. And it was
maybe
like
that's where the three comes from, because I did look it up. It's three treasure chests and two DLC packs. So that might be what I was thinking with three. But anyways, continue. Sorry.
Those chests are pretty lame. One's like an opal, which is something you have in abundance in that game after you do a little bit of mining. And I think another one was some rupees or maybe a weapon of some kind or arrows. It was something lame that you're going to get a bunch of anyways. And then it was a Switch shirt, which just looks so out of place and breaks any sort of immersion you might be trying to go for. Especially when you look at all the other stuff they've added to the game, like the way they explain a lot of the treasure stuff that you're finding, like Midna's helmet and Tingle's suit, they're heirlooms that have been collected by the Hyrule family and stored in Hyrule Castle, then stolen by this, I don't know, Mizbo, or Mizban, whatever they call them.
Which makes sense, lore-wise.
Exactly. Right? And it's neat because, there is this timeline, there is this hierarchy of Links that have come before and Zeldas that have come before, and the fact that they are acknowledging the fact that they collect these heirlooms and store them in this castle, you know, even confirming that maybe this castle might be the same throughout the generations, is interesting and actually has spawned a whole new where does this fall in the timeline debate, but it's really cool. But yeah, the Switch t-shirt is dumb and kind of like so out of character for Nintendo to do that. But I'm just loving the fact that I have something on my Switch to play, because I did not pick up ARMS. It didn't really do it for me, and I'm just excited that I'm back playing my Switch, because I just love Nintendo games. And well, we're going to talk a bit about more Nintendo games coming soon, so.
That we are. Right after we take a moment to thank the patrons, you can go to patreon.com/thegamersin if you'd like to support the show. We thank each and every one of you for helping us out. It makes it so much easier for us to go and buy the games that we need to buy to cover them for you guys. So it also enables our ability to do things like game night. So thank you guys so much for supporting the show. We also have a patron ad this week from The Geek Review. The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. So our topic this week is summer games. Basically, we thought we'd give you a preview of what is coming up in July and August, because it's been a holiday in Canada, it's been a holiday in the States, and that basically means everyone's been very hush-hush quiet this week. Not a whole lot of news. So we thought we would give you guys a quick preview of what is up and coming. So there is one that is coming out just before my birthday. My birthday's on the 14th. This one comes out July 12th. It's called The End Is Nigh, from the makers of The Binding of Isaac and Super Meat Boy. It looks very like spiritual successor to Super Meat Boy, and also looks insanely hard. Like, I probably won't pick this up, because I'm pretty sure I would be throwing a controller within about 10 minutes of starting this game.
they even lead off the trailer with an ad that kind of shows a person being very upset with the game. It looks... I don't know about you, but I kind of enjoyed Super Meat Boy, but fell off halfway through because it did get so devastating. And this appears to be doubling down on that fact, and I just don't like games that punish me. And I really enjoyed Binding of Isaac, the last game that one of these guys put together, and it was less difficult and more just It was a randomized roguelike type situation, and I just enjoyed that. This looks like Super Meat Boy on steroids, and I just,
yeah,
no thank you.
On steroids with, like, less hearts, like, less lives.
Yeah, it looks very, like, very doom and gloom, which is also something that is unfortunate, because that was a great thing about Super Meat Boy, because it was so bright and colorful and splat, you know, it was really good.
I was going to say, yeah, Super Meat Boy was the very, like, I remember, like, grays and blacks and whites and browns for, like, their level design. And so it was very kind of muted. And that's because every time you died, your blood would splatter all over everything. And then so you had the red kind of really popping out and showing you all the different places and ways that you died. So, yeah, you're right. The End Is Nigh is, it's very, it almost reminds me of Limbo. Like, it's all very, like, backlit, black and white, like, yeah. Even when the little character dies, he just kind of goes split, and because he's kind of like a little blob, he's not the meat blob, he's like a almost like a slug looking kind of thing.
It's all black and monochrome.
It is black. Yeah, it is all black. So when he dies, he just kind of goes and then all of the, yeah, like, you, I don't know,
ink. Like an
I was gonna say paint, but yeah, same difference. Yep. So that's coming on July 12th. So if you guys are into super punishing platformers, then that one is for you. I'm not 100% sure on the price, but it is PC only. So look for that. We were talking a little bit about the Switch. So this one is for you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. What's coming on July 21st?
Yeah. So Splatoon 2 is finally here. It's launching. So here's my predicament. It's launching on a weekend-ish where I am going to be out and about, which you'd think would be great because it's on Switch and you can take it with you, but alas, I will be out and about, like, during the time it comes out, so I won't be able to actually get my hands on it. But yeah, Splatoon 2 is coming out July 21st. It's sort of Nintendo's initiative to have a new game each month. So with ARMS in June, we now have Splatoon 2 in July. Single player, multiplayer, horde mode, some weird smartphone app that you can use. We're actually going to be getting a direct tomorrow at, like, I think noon to deep dive a little bit more into what Splatoon 2 actually is. But yeah, I really enjoyed Splatoon on Wii U, and I feel like a lot of folks didn't play that game because it was on Wii U. So if you own a Switch, I think it's definitely worth checking out. Kind of the biggest, you know, release of July, which, dry month, you know.
Yeah, the only other real big one, although there is an early access title coming as well, but we're getting basically a beta and an early access title. We're getting Destiny 2's open beta on consoles, so PS4 and Xbox One, that's July 21st as well. We're also getting Fortnite, which is doing a paid early access. So basically, if you pre-order, then you get early access to Fortnite, which is on PC, PS4, and Xbox One on July 25th. So kind of like some help us test stuff. Here's what we're thinking of doing. Ryan, I know you did play Destiny. Are you going to be playing Destiny 2?
I think so. And I believe the wording was, if I don't get it on PC, I will be yelled at by several people. So I will be probably getting it on PC, but I am looking forward to jumping into the beta when I can. The PC beta is scheduled for sometime in August, but the console beta in July. I'm cautiously optimistic about Destiny because I didn't feel so good about the original release, and then Taken King, you know, was really good, and then the next expansion, which I don't even remember its name, was just really bad. So I'm wary. Like, that's not a good track record. Now we do know that Destiny 2 is being made by the team that worked on Taken King, so that might be good. But yeah, I'll check out the beta, but and I'll probably get it on PC, is I think what we're looking at. Now, are you gonna check out the beta? Is that something you're?
No, Destiny never really vibed with me, so I'm probably not going to. I've always been more of a fantasy person than a sci-fi person, although I did love Mass Effect and a couple of other titles. Fantasy just basically appeals to me on a very broad level. So Destiny just didn't grab me, so I probably won't pick up Destiny 2 unless everyone around me is just telling me how it's like the next World of Warcraft and they're all going to be playing it for the next 20 years, in which case I'll be like, all right, I'll get it then.
Wow. But, that's like... hey, as long as your game is perfect and everyone wants to play it forever, exactly. I will check it out. That's not high praise.
I just need it to be that good, I guess. I need to, because basically, well, what happened before and what happens with a lot of these different mm-hmm. titles is everyone's really into it for the first month and then they drop off. And so I don't want to kind of give something a try that I know is in a genre that doesn't necessarily appeal to me if my friends are going to give it up after a couple weeks.
Yeah, I feel like Destiny was a slow burn for a lot of folks, and that it was a slow burn over the course of at least two to three years. And then there were those hardcores that played it, but I think for a majority of people that run in our circles,
it was a long burn. I'm not saying that a whole bunch of people didn't play it. I'm not saying Destiny, the original one, wasn't a success. Mm-hmm. It's just, it just seems like you get a giant surge at launch, obviously, and then people's tend to fall off, and I don't have a lot of people in my gaming circle who stuck with Destiny beyond the first month or maybe two. Even going back to it when it had things like Taken King that a lot of people really did enjoy, again, it surges and done after a couple of weeks. So if Destiny 2 seems to be the kind of thing where lots of people are playing for an extended amount of time, and there's, you know, members of my WoW raid team who want to start raiding in Destiny, or, you know, stuff like that, if it seems like people are really sticking around for the end game content, then I might go invest in it. But I've been burned too many times by things like ESO and WildStar, although I am still playing ESO, but...
There's like a special thing going on this week, isn't
it? I'm playing by myself, so like I'm not playing with other people. I'm just playing it because I want more Elder Scrolls content. So
I need to jump back into that. There's like a special week event going on right now, I think, in Elder Scrolls where you get like free shit.
There is. So if you have, at least the email that I got was something along the lines of like, get more out of your premium subscription. And it's like, if you log in, you get a bonus every day. So there's some kind of treasure, something.
Something cool.
Well, bonus currency, bonus content, yeah. So definitely, if you are playing ESO, worth logging in. But that is not what we are talking about right now. We are talking about things coming out in July. And this one kind of slipped my notice for a little bit, but it's called Fortnite. Ryan, have you actually seen this title? Because it looks pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
It's like a... combination. It has the same sort of graphics. It reminds me of Dungeon Defenders. Mm-hmm. So it has that kind of like over the top, super cartoony kind of look to it. Also, it's got like the hordes constantly coming at you. So it's like a kind of a monster zombie game. Basically, the premise is like there was a big storm, and after the storm, there was like an apocalypse, basically. So the storm brought all the monsters, and you are survivors. So you have to kind of, you can play as a whole bunch of different classes. You have to build a fort, and then you have to go out and rescue survivors and bring them. And then obviously when you get the survivors, then they give you different, you know, buffs to your forts and stuff like that. So it looks really fun. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like co-op-y, tower defense-y. Like, it seems to kind of hit a lot of, but it also has like the kind of...
like scavenging.
Scavenging is the word I was looking for. I was like scrounging, but that's not quite the word. But yeah, scavenging. So you have to actually like leave your fort to go and find more materials. And so it also, in that way, channels a little bit of Minecraft as well, because when you're building your fort, it's not just like in Dungeon Defenders where, you know, you can just build and upgrade a certain kind of turret or something. It's like you can literally place your walls and your windows and your stairs and floors and everything in, and traps as well, because you can craft traps. So it's got like a crafting system like Ark with a creative system like Minecraft, where you can just build kind of whatever you want. I think they showed like a fort built like a giraffe or something in the trailer. Like, it just, you can basically do whatever you want when you're building your base. So
it looks very colorful. It's built on the Unreal Engine. It's one of those games you are going to have to buy into to play in early access, but, you know, that's sort of the norm now, so I don't think anyone should be shocked by that practice, but
you can pay, so you can basically pre-order the game and get early access in July, otherwise you'll have to wait. I don't have a problem waiting, but I think when it does come out for real, then this is something that I will probably pick up, because I feel like it takes a whole bunch of different things that I enjoy from other games and puts them into one, Whereas, you know, like the creativity of Minecraft isn't enough for me to go play Minecraft. The, you know, scavenging and survival of Ark isn't enough to make me go and play Ark. And then, you know, horde modes in other video games aren't really enough, you know, to make me go play something like Orcs Must Die, where it's just, you know, pretty much tower defense on a rail. But when you kind of combine it all into one game that I can then go and play with my friends, I feel like that's something I could be really into.
Yeah. No, it looks like a lot of fun. I'm certainly going to be hoping to check it out in late July.
And then so in August, first of all, we have StarCraft Remastered coming out on the PC August 14th. Is this something that you're looking forward to? Because I know I'm really excited because I never played original StarCraft. So the chance to go back and play something that's totally new to me in a universe that I know that I enjoy. I just talked about how I prefer fantasy over sci-fi, but StarCraft is that one kind of big exception to the rule where I really, really, really enjoy playing StarCraft. So is this something you're excited about?
Yeah. I'm most excited by the fact that it has a very conservative Blizzard price in that it's $15 US, which is kind of, I don't know. I just, when I think of Blizzard, I think of how many extra $5 can I get out of people? Like, everything's just a little, like, it's always, yes. It's always got that Blizzard tax on it. And I feel like StarCraft Remastered and even the Necromancer bundle at $15 each is just solid pricing from a company that just does not usually do that. And maybe they make up for that with their overpriced loot boxes, overpriced hero stuff, overpriced Hearthstone stuff. Whatever, I'm fine with that. If you whales out there want to go out and buy all that free-to-play stuff and I get to buy this stuff at a reasonable price, good. But no, I played StarCraft on the N64, so I almost have to play this so I can say I played StarCraft on a platform that actually won't get me laughed out of the room.
Right.
Because the N64 was not built for RTSs. And I love StarCraft, and I think they've also, they call it a remastering, and that I think they have done a little bit of work to the campaign, not giving it, you know, high quality StarCraft 2-esque cutscenes, but giving them more of a more story, more additional good looking screen. I don't know if they're motion comics or something. I can't remember, but they said they were addressing that somehow.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that, and I think $15 is a solid price to pay for a very old game, but a very beloved game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, depending on exactly what kind of updates we're looking at, I mean, I feel like they could have charged 20, 25, like they could have charged a lot more. I think the people who are hardcore StarCraft players are probably going to buy it regardless of what it costs. But at $15, I think they're going to kind of reach a whole different audience. It's I think beyond affordable because StarCraft is like the game that kicked off a lot of esports stuff, you know, like it's where a lot of things started. So I can't wait to get my hands on it and actually give it a try. Because yeah, like I said, everyone knows I came to StarCraft and StarCraft 2. So, the other thing that's coming in August is Uncharted Lost Legacy. So this is the standalone DLC for Uncharted 4, on the obviously PlayStation 4, coming August 22nd in North America and the 23rd in the EU. And I'm excited for more Uncharted content because even though you're not going to be playing as Nathan Drake, I still want more of that combat, more of that world. Are you excited? Are you going to be picking this one up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Uncharted. And I dig Chloe. She's a very good character. Nadine was also really good when they introduced her in Uncharted 4. And yeah, it's just I don't think Nathan Drake is awesome, but him being the main character wasn't what made those games amazing. It was just the action and the set pieces and that. And you know, everybody is Nathan Drake in those Uncharted games. They all act the exact same. They all have the now this is being very reductive, but they all have that quirky sense of humor. They're all poking fun at each other when they should be focusing on the fact that the bullets are flying by their heads. And I think that's why this game will work without Nathan Drake, because you still have those plucky, you know, get stuff done while looking good type characters. So I'm not so worried about Nathan Drake being nowhere to be seen in this game. So I'm excited about it. Late August is looking hairy. Like,
yeah, it's packed because the next three titles that we're going to talk about all come out on at the same time, August 29th. So the first one is a Switch title, so I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, so Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. It's basically XCOM with Nintendo characters. And yeah, I'm just basically going to call the Rabbids Nintendo characters because they are essentially very Nintendo-like. They are obviously owned by Ubisoft, but this is a, I think they said 30% platforming and 70% tactile gameplay. So I'm really looking forward to that, and honestly, it's on the Switch, and really, they're scraping the barrel in terms of getting this thing out in August so they can say they have a new game coming out each month, but yeah, new Switch game, I'm all over it, and honestly, this is probably the most surprising game they unveiled at E3. Like, I did not see this one coming. The fact that they got Nintendo to okay Mario having a gun is, sure.
Yep.
New world.
Yeah, I guess the closest he's had previously is, like, the water gun pistol thing from, like, Sunshine, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And so you also mentioned that it's very similar to XCOM. XCOM 2 War of the Chosen's expansion on PC, PS4, and Xbox One is coming out the same day. So is this going, because they are very, very similar gameplay, if not in kind of theme and feel. So for you, obviously you mentioned Switch, yay. But are you going to pick up both, or are you going to wait on one or the other? Like, they're basically the same kind of gameplay. So
yeah.
Where do you stand on XCOM 2 expansion versus Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle?
they've got a similar feel. XCOM 2 obviously being a more mature title with aliens and people dying.
You don't say.
Yeah, exactly.
Rabbids dressing up in cosplay and taking selfies.
but you know, I was having this conversation last night when we were playing, of all things, Battlegrounds, and I was basically saying, like, you know, I need games that aren't just killing people. I need games where it's light, it's fluffy, it's colorful, it's funny. And I think Mario plus Rabbids gives me that. And XCOM 2 War of the Chosen, I will certainly pick it up at some point. But it's probably something I'm going to wait on. Because you're right, it's a very similar type of gameplay. And I think when it comes to grid-based tactics, there's only so much time and patience to go around for those types of games.
Yeah.
And I feel like in Mario plus Rabbids, I'll have more fun because it'll be more forgiving as opposed to XCOM 2, where I always miss my critical 90% shots and then I die. And my favorite dude dies and I have to reset the game. It's unfortunate.
Also coming out on August 29th on PC and PS4 is a game called Absolver, which is a kind of another one of these, like, hybrid kind of titles. So it is a fighting game. So it's a melee fighting game. But it's kind of an MMO. So it's got elements of questing. It's got elements of role-playing. And you're also going around an open-ish world. And there's also PvE stuff, and there's PvP stuff. You can do stuff in groups and not in groups. So, Ryan, have you seen any of the coverage for Absolver yet?
No, but it looks really cool. Like, the graphics look really neat.
Yeah, the graphics have a really interesting kind of style. So everyone seems to be wearing some kind of a mask. And the first ones that they show are wearing those kind of, like, very, like, white with, like, black eyes and mouth featured, like, theater kind of masks. But then later on in the trailer, like, it's showing you, like, a mask covered in blinking eyes and, like, all kinds, like, it gets very, like, big and cool very quickly. So not everybody is stuck always looking the same, but it's interesting because the combat seems to be very much like channeling Street Fighter.
Oh. And an MMO.
Yeah. But, I mean, it could just be stylized like that in the trailer. Like, it might not actually play like that. It has been getting really positive reviews from different people. And mostly people who got their hands on it, I think, E3 2016, I want to say. And basically they're saying, like, yeah, it's surprisingly fun. It's surprisingly challenging. Like, everyone was like, it's surprisingly insert thing here. So I think this could kind of be like our sleeper summer hit, because I don't believe that it comes with any kind of subscription. I think it's just, you know, very like traditional games. You pay a price and then you own it and you play it, even though it does have the online component.
Okay.
So yeah, I think this could be a kind of a cool, if you're into, because like I said, it's all melee combat, so you've got kind of a style of play where you are very quick and very accurate and it's all hand-to-hand stuff. Or you can be kind of like slower if you actually use a weapon. But then there was also a character who looked like she had a ball of smoke almost in her hand. So I'm wondering if there's maybe some sort of magic too. But again, it's all melee combat. There's no ranged combat. So I don't really know what she, maybe it's like a smoke bomb that makes her go invisible or something. I don't know. But it does look really, really, really cool. So yeah,
the stylized graphics look almost kind of paper crafty, but somewhat realistic in a way as well. It's very good.
And then so finally on August 31st, we have episode one of the new Life is Strange sequel called Before the Storm. So I get sequel, prequel. Yep. So that comes out on August 31st. And I think that's probably a title that we're both going to pick up. I don't know if I'll stream it, though, because Life is Strange tends to be really depressing. And we know how this actually ends, because it is a prequel. So we know that Rachel gets abducted and murdered. So it's not going to a good place.
No, this is one of those games that also feels like it'll be less, what's the word I'm looking for? Less powersy, whereas the first one had the ability to turn back time and all that fun stuff, and more teenage angst, which is something that we kind of flagged in the first game as like, okay, this game's really good, but they're like almost capturing the teenage stuff too well, you know? Which for some is kind of like, this is my jam, and others is like, oh God, why are we watching Degrassi?
Yeah, so we'll have to see how that one plays out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try episode one, and then we'll see where we go from there. But yeah, so again, Life is Strange Before the Storm comes out August 31st. And obviously, we didn't cover absolutely everything coming out in July and August. We just kind of looked over the list to see what we thought would be interesting and that we might be covering. So if there's anything you guys think that we missed or that you would like to see us cover, please do let us know. You can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com if you would like to do that. But before we go, we wanted to remind everyone to check out Simon's podcast.
Yeah. Queekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at queeklynews.com.
I would also like to remind everybody that there is only about a week left on the Kickstarter that we are running for Embrace the Spoilers. That is Garrett and myself are going to be spoiling all of Game of Thrones Season 7. So we have met our goal, but there's some really cool stretch goals that are we're actually pretty close to our first stretch goal, which is basically us covering some of the summer movies that have come out. So if you guys are interested, please do head on over to bit.ly/Embrace the Spoilers if you'd like to help and fund our project and maybe get us to some of those stretch goals. I think it ends next Friday, which is my birthday, so
birthday gift.
Exactly, that would be an excellent birthday gift, although it depends how well you think Indiana Jones actually stands up, because that's the second stretch goal. So
as long, and I doubt Garrett would do this to you, but I don't think you're gonna have to watch what is probably the worst. It doesn't exist. There are three Indiana Jones films. Don't let anyone tell you any different.
Which is funny, because Crystal Skull is the only one I've actually seen, so.
So, yeah, no wonder you don't want to watch Indiana Jones. No wonder we have to get a stretch goal in there so you'll watch them. Yeah, you watch the worst one.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. If you'd like to visit us on the web, you can do so at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth. I just realized that Overwatchers is actually no longer on the A-Move Network, but they are still an awesome show, and you guys should check them out. Also, obviously, embrace the spoilers that we were just mentioning. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn and Joss Plays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/amovetv. You can also email the show, like I mentioned a couple of minutes ago. If you think that we have missed a summer video game that you want us to cover, you can do that at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. And remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.